significant synergy between both of these talks because, in some sense, the background for them is a little bit the same. And I think I failed to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Dinwiddie, Dr. Chan, and Rachel McClary. Dr. Dinwiddie's is at the University of Maryland, and Dr. Chan is at Johns Hopkins, as along with Ms. McClary. Funding source the same, nothing else to disclose. So now that we think that there's a relationship between where physicians are and minority communities and residential segregation, we want to ask the question, well, is this in some ways related to healthcare utilization? Because that's exactly where we want to go. We want to go to where does this, is this a particular of healthcare utilization? And so what we do is we ask the question, well, can we explain disparities in office-based, use of office-based healthcare as a predictor of the use of services, and does living in a majority-minority zip code influences one's use of office-based care? Here what we do is we link the census data to the 2006 MEPS, and we look at office-based use among the adults in that survey who live in metropolitan statistical areas. To do this analysis, we have to do it in the ARC Research Data Center. And so our key variable of interest here is looking at visits to physicians, office-based physicians, both primary and specialty physicians, and then looking at visits to non-physicians, again, office-based, and these are the list of professions in which that covers. And our key dependent variable is whether or not the zip code is predominantly African-American or Hispanic. We don't look at the Asians in the sample just because there are too few Asians in the sample who are living in predominantly Asian zip codes. Here the methodology is to look at both the initiation of service use as well as the use of subsequent use. So whether or not you have a physician visit or a office-based visit, and then how many office-based visits you have, using a logistic regression to do the former, and then a negative binomial to do the latter. And then we have two models, one where we're just a simple model where we're controlling for age, gender, marital status, the usual suspects, along with race and ethnicity. And then another model where we include the majority black and majority Hispanic zip code variables, and we interact that with race and ethnicity in our models. So right here, this is just some results from our base model. It just shows what the disparity that we observe among blacks and Hispanics relative to whites, the odds of using an office-based physician services and non-physician services. We see the usual disparity that we observe. This is now looking at the interaction between what happens when you interact where that person is, whether they're in a white zip code or a minority zip code. So the first two here, this is blacks living in a white zip code, and this is blacks living in a black zip code. And so what we see is that blacks in general are less likely to use services relative to whites, but those living in black zip codes are have a lower likelihood of using services. What we see for Hispanics is the exact opposite. We see Hispanics are less likely to use services if they're living in a white zip code, but more likely to use services if they're living in a Hispanic zip code. And then something that really surprised us is that the two bars, this bar right here, these are whites living in black zip codes, and these are whites living in Hispanic zip codes. And so what we find is whites living in Hispanic zip codes are less likely to use services relative to whites living in white zip codes, and whites living in black zip codes are more likely to use services relative to whites living in white zip codes. And this data right here is the data for the non-physician services, and in each case, whites living in white zip codes are use more services, or persons living in black zip codes or Hispanic zip codes are less likely to use services. And then for both blacks and Hispanics, living in their own zip codes that where they are the majority tends to lower their use of services. And whites living in those zip codes also tend to use less services. So this is, to some extent, supports our argument that we think that geographic, that place, in a real sense, matters. And in this case, when you look at what's happening to whites for non-physician services, they look a lot like, for instance, blacks and Hispanics. And so, in that case, it may be a geographic difference, not merely a race difference. This is the incident ratio, the subsequent use, and we pretty much, this is what we observe when we do this analysis, not considering place. And then this is what we observe when we consider place. And one of the things that you would note is that place has the opposite effect or different effect for subsequent use than it does for initial use, in that blacks moving from white zip codes to black zip codes, less likely, they still use less services, but the difference is smaller. And the same thing with the non-physician services. And then for Hispanics, we have a same story for physician services, the opposite for non-physician services. And then for whites in Hispanic zip codes, we still see, to some extent, some persons are less likely to use services. So in summary, we find that we do find, as others, racial disparities in the use of office-based services. In general, African Americans and Hispanics are less likely to use those services. But living in predominantly black and Hispanic zip codes does matter, and it impacts each racial and ethnic group somewhat differently. This right here just summarizes the results, so I'm not going to talk through these slides. But what I would like to say in conclusion is that with regard to office-based physician services, some effort should be made to deal with problems in predominantly African-American communities, as well as for non-physician services, some effort should be made to deal with access problems in minority communities in general. For whites who live in Hispanic zip codes, what we think that's going on there is that in Hispanic communities, at least the ones that I'm familiar with in the Washington metropolitan area, what happens usually is the signage changes. You really get the sense that speaking Spanish in that area is a very important way in which you can conduct business. Because you drive past the stores and you see the signs, and the signs have Spanish names on them. And so it may be that getting information about physician services in those communities for non-Spanish speakers might be difficult, and that's what we're observing with our the whites who live in Hispanic communities. So I'll stop here.
Thanks.
And thank you very much for listening to me.
We have more than 15 minutes for discussion. These are, in my estimation, rather disparate. They all group in some way with each other, but it might be helpful if we address questions one at a time, although I'm certainly, if anyone can relate the different presentations, that'd be great. Did I have a question back here? Yes, please.
Any more questions for Dr. Perlstadt?
Okay. Ma'am, I don't know your name. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My question is for Dr. Brady. Actually, a couple of questions. You mentioned at the beginning that distance from services could be affecting whether insured men would seek the services. But when you had your project, it was a 30-mile distance to the sort of group event of screening. And I wondered how that got picked. To me, that's kind of a long distance. And I would think maybe that helps to explain why you only had 201 out of 6,000 or 8,000 show up. I'm just curious how you factored that in.
First question about the distance, that was what came up in our focus groups in terms of barriers to getting preventive service. One thing that was mentioned is, you know, having, or one of the ideal characteristics, I guess, is a convenient location. So we did invite men within 30 miles of a location we identified, and we thought of it in terms of convenient, in terms of access by bus routes or by highway and things like that, ample parking, ample space. That way. So when we got the people who came, they did actually come through from, you know, very close to the location that we chose and from, you know, maybe 20 miles or so out. So it's a good question. We should look at that a little bit more closely. In terms of your second question, which was, I think, asking about, you know, when did we get to the point of not having to do a particular event to, like, an alternative event, like you mentioned. The other project and work that I'm doing at Henry Ford is our healthcare equity campaign. And This is a lot around cultural competency and working with our practitioners in terms of asking the right questions and really providing care in a culturally competent way and really achieving equity in our quality. So it's something that we're working on. But I think, you know, there again, one of our very important findings is that what the participants really mentioned over and over again is that they really enjoyed having this event that focused on them. They said, I've never had an event really focus on me before, and I appreciate that attention. And that peer support that was present that day was, I think, very beneficial. People were exchanging information, phone numbers, and things like that, and I think they just really enjoyed the camaraderie coming together with a common background.
Any more questions?
I have the question, really, because you show that when we pay attention, reach out, we can increase utilization and rational utilization. Our studies so often on various clinics don't look and see what are they doing. In other words, the individual provider makes a difference. I can turn patients off very easily and discourage them, because I've had doctors do that. Or I can make patients think, hey, he's a good doctor, even if I'm not, I hope I wasn't. Anyway. Do we look at the characteristics of the services provided and the outreach and the personnel? Because it makes a huge difference. And you showed it. We tried it for years and years, and I used to kick the studies because they used to say, well, look at the hospital clinics to see how primary care is. Well, it wasn't a way to study primary care. The hospital clinic is not a good place for primary care. It wasn't in the past. So how do we make sure we're studying something that is really emphasizing what it needs to be, or are we studying something that is may or may not be doing what it needs to be? Sorry to know that. This one's always frustrating.
Well, I am, I guess personally, of the mindset that one of the things in which we're currently very comfortable with is we're very comfortable with interventions that focus either on patients or on individual providers. But we're not very comfortable with interventions that try to do system or community level changes. And so we don't think about the provider in his context or the patient in their context often enough and think about how we can implement policies that influences that context. And so, hence, that's why we're focusing on sort of these geographic variables. And what we want to do is not only do we want to then say where you live matters, but then we want to go beyond that and start thinking about what is it about these particular communities that where we get this outcome, and how do they differ from this? Why can this physician be effective in this community when a similarly trained physician in a different community cannot be as effective? And so, in that sense, we're trying to get closer to things that are really influencing outcomes and not just leave it pretty much on the individuals and saying if we give patient education, we give physicians cultural competency training, that somehow that's going to bridge the difference. And so that's you know, sort of what my own personal opinion.
Are there any more questions for the Detroit study? Or, you
yes,
got one?
What comes to mind, if you only had 200 out of 8,000, do you have any ideas or any plans to change or approach to try to get more of those other, what you said, 200 that didn't show up,
right,
that might have been to show up more than those that did show up? Do you have any plans to try to approach them in a different way?
Sure. I mean, that's our next steps. Like I said, the funding is to start pilot demonstration projects. So we'll continue, CAP is going to continue to do that project. Well, we're going to move on to look at more pilot projects. So one of the things we might do is look at what is a better way to reach out to a broader base. What we did this year is we were more intentional about identifying men that were missing services that really needed to come in And what we tried to do differently this year was to include a letter from their primary care physician, the one they currently have, just saying that, you know, you're due for services, there's this event going on, I recommend that you attend to get up to date on your preventive services. And we included that with the mailing. And we're not sure that was actually very effective, because what we did is also invite the people that came last year, since they said they would attend again. And I think a lot of them attended again. And we had a number of people who really needed to come in that did, but still, it wasn't that as effective as we had hoped. So I think our next step is to look at that.
Did you send a letter to their wives or to them?
That's the other thing we have thought out. And actually, one of the focus groups we did was with African American women, asking them what they thought their role was in terms of encouraging men in their lives to get care and things like that. And in fact, a lot of the phone calls we get for registration were made by women. And in fact, some of them came to and, you know, dropped the men off and came back and picked them up when they were done.
So let me ask a question. If you reflect back on the 200, why did they come? Why were you successful with those 200, and how would you replicate that rather than try a new strategy to get the other?
That's a great question. Again, I think one of the things that came out of the satisfaction survey was the fact that they could get it all done at once. Some people did have to come back for maybe if they're due for colonoscopy, we made an appointment for them right there, and they did have to come back or something like that. But I think it was just convenient to come one Saturday, get it all done, you know, get up to date at least for that year on all the preventive services. So I think the convenience of that was really motivating. And then the people that came back this year who were attended last year, they came back and they just had, they had really enjoyed it. So.
I mean, I would suggest that you would replicate that over and over and over and over and over until you accumulate enough of your people, rather than think that you need to try out a new strategy.
I guess maybe I'm unclear, but were these subscribers to the health plan?
Yes, they were insured through PAP. Yep.
Which introduces another layer. You don't know how many people were not. All the mailings went out to people who had contact with Ford, right? So there's another group out there, presumably.
Yeah, so now that PAP is taking this on, they're not just going to be Henry Ford patients, but all their, you know, patients in different health systems as well. So they'll actually have a larger reach as they continue to do this.
Do you have another?
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just too puzzled. If I'm a physician, do I get paid more if I make sure every single one of my patients has all appropriate screenings? And do I get paid less if I don't make sure?
No.
And why would it be wrong to expect that of me?
I'm sorry, expect what of you?
That I make sure every one of my patients has all appropriate screenings. I don't get it. I don't even understand why this problem exists in the new era of health reform, where there are going to be more demands placed on how care is delivered and the folks who are delivering it. I'm baffled. What is it I'm failing to see?
Change incentive.
When you did your initial focus group, did you ask them about what incentives would be attractive? Is that how you come to the gift card?
Yeah, we did ask them. We said, you know, again, that if we waived co-pays, that would be great, but there were no co-pays for coming in that day, plus the additional incentive. But what we found actually in the satisfaction survey is that the gift card, we asked, did the gift card influence your decision to come today? And it was less than 30% said that it wasn't influencing their coming that day. And actually this year, we did reduce the gift card amount for budgetary reasons, so I think it was $10 or $15, and it didn't seem to make a difference at all.
Yeah?
I have a question for Dr. Jasper.
Good.
Comment. Great study, very interesting. And one of your conclusions, which I see around a lot, this idea, there's two of the many problems we have. One is that there are not enough people of color in medical schools and health provider schools. And the second problem is that we have this maldistribution of providers. bothers me a little bit to hear that we need to fix the one problem by fixing the other problem. Because the reason, part of the reason there's a maldistribution is because there are some areas that are better to work in than other areas. And I guess I feel like it would be better to, although we absolutely need to increase the number of people of color in medical and health providers, medical schools and others, I would not want to then expect that those folks have to go practicing these. You know what I'm saying? I see them as two separate problems, and maybe the reason that we have such maldistribution of docs is because we don't do a good enough job in our segregated society making our health provider students feel comfortable going into another community when they're not from. And I know, Mr. Peterson, your comment on
that. Well, I would say it's not only. Well, let me say this. I agree. They're two different problems, and we don't. It's not our intention to put the two together and present them as one problem. One of the things in which we would argue is that the amenities available in majority and minority communities in and of themselves. So access to, in some places, if you wanted to even have a real functioning EMR, since Verizon hasn't or whoever hasn't laid cable in that community, you can't connect appropriately to the internet to run the kinds of software that you want to run. And that's a deterrent to operating in that community. It impacts your environment. If you feel as though crime is not handled appropriately in particular areas of town, so that when crimes happen, no one gets arrested, then you won't, because you don't care what the color of the people there, you don't want to locate there because you don't want to be there, you don't necessarily want to bring others there to do business with you. Even when you think about how persons who are selling pharmaceuticals, equipment, and they're running their routes because they're just visiting provider after provider, and if they're reluctant to come to particular areas of town to see physicians, then that's going to be a deterrent to physicians to locate there. So it's all those things that are the contextual things that we want to eventually get at. Yes, we do agree that there are too few minority physicians and that there are too few primary care physicians. But we also want to highlight that in these communities, the resources that physicians need to have to sustain a reasonable practice are not present. And those are the things in which we need to invest in.
Thank you. Great. We're at noon now. You're welcome to stay and talk some more informally. In fact, if you stay for another half hour, the medical care section is having the Donna Badian Awards here, and we'd love to have you stay for that too. But thanks very much, everyone, for attending. And please hang around if you want to for a while. And thanks again to our presenters. Good project.